Argujiga Kalsaw Argujiki Fateh. Welcome to another episode of Ask Canadian Six. I'm one of your co-hosts, Jaspreet, and as always, we are joined from Edmonton live, Harman. Harman, how are you doing?
Doing well. You know, the forest fires have subsided here in Alberta. Albertans have gone back to thinking climate change is not real.
Amazing. And you guys had, there was quite a moment there where you had both the two stories that were going on. You had elections and you had fires. So there's a lot of news coming out of your province and everything seems to have settled now. How are you feeling about your new post-election life?
You know, it's a lot of same olds in Alberta. The Conservatives are back in government. One positive note, I guess, for Canadian Six is Rod Nsani appointed as Minister of Advanced Education.
Nice. This month's podcast, I mean, the biggest story in terms of Canadian Six right now, and I would say this has become an international story, is the assassination of Gurdwara President in BC, Hardeep Nijjar. So we'll talk about that. And then we are also going to end on a slightly stronger note, talking about all of the amazing advocacy and hard work that international students who were victims of fraud did here in Ontario. And I think that that's a huge success and a huge congratulations to them and all of the advocacy they did for themselves. But to start out, yeah, this is surreal. And I know even though if folks listen to the podcast, they would know that foreign interference, Khalistan, threats to people's lives is something that we regularly talk about. Even being immersed in this world and understanding what some of those threats are, it felt absolutely surreal. I was listening to the radio, listening to the news, the headlines, and all of a sudden I heard bot on the radio. And I was like, wait, what am I? I was like, did I switch? Did I turn on my bot by accident? And it was just a few seconds of bot. And then it was a CBC host saying, now we turn to Surrey, where the president of a Gurdwara has been shot in the Gurdwara parking lot. And it was the world's colliding. Like it to hear bot being broadcast on mainstream news as news was very, very strange. And that's the least of it. Harman, when did you first hear about the assassination of Hardeep Nijjar?
I think it was kind of late into that evening when it had happened that, you know, a lot of, you know, my phone started getting really active. And the news started to come out that by Hardeep Singh Nijjar was assassinated in the, you know, kind of Gurdwara premises. And immediately it was shock to hear that, you know, he was shot within, you know, the proximity of the premises and just trying to process what just happened. And immediately you start to kind of realize that this is more than just, you know, just a shooting in Lower Mainland. This was an assassination.
And I think that's an interesting word that I use, that I've seen used in Six circles. It's not one that I have seen readily used in Canadian media. I think World Sikh Organization immediately put out a statement asking for a probe into who was responsible. We know that President Nijjar knew that his life was at risk. We know that CSIS knew that his life was at risk and Canadian officials knew, RCMP knew, and still it wasn't enough to afford him the protection that he needed. And the first time I heard the story in the news, it came alongside, so the news clip also said the World Sikh Organization of Canada is asking for a further investigation into the possibility of foreign interference, which one I thought was really strong that it landed, the story landed in mainstream media with an immediate ask for looking into foreign interference. But the other thing I've also heard is from a Canadian perspective is this balance, and balance is in air quotes, you can't see that I'm doing air quotes, where they'll say, this man was considered someone who's advocating for Khalistan in Canada. The Indian government considers him a terrorist. So there's, I haven't heard the term assassination used as readily in mainstream media. And I've heard this kind of plea for balance, quote unquote balance in the narrative. And sharing that this is what India thought as well. When you're hearing the story, when you're hearing people talk about it, are you seeing that same difference between how Sikhs are talking about it, how Canadian Sikhs are talking about it, and how other Canadians are talking about it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, that is exactly kind of the struggle that we've always faced when it comes to, you know, mainstream media's coverage of events that involve the Sikh community. You know, I think so many of us were already reeling from the news of Dr. Singh Kanda's death in the UK and what that meant if there was, you know, foul play, if there was some suspicious circumstances, whether or not there was, you know, some targeting and whether that was an assassination. And I think, you know, prior to that, like, you know, when you're trying to grapple with that question of, well, is this possible that, you know, the government of India has now started to kind of go beyond its borders in targeting Sikhs? And I think everyone is still kind of trying to grasp that concept. And then in the background, you had, you know, Modi's trip to the U.S. and his first official state visit, coming to the U.S. at the request of, you know, President Biden, trying to build stronger ties as a counterbalance to China, completely ignoring, you know, the fact that Modi had been at one point banned from the U.S. for his role in, you know, the Gujarat riots. And, you know, now all of a sudden with Biden Niger's assassination, it was shocking. And post his assassination, seeing, you know, the media accounts, and we've known for several years now that the Indian media has tried to push this narrative of this nexus between gangsters, drug violence, and Khalistanis. And you knew that this was what was trying to be painted. And immediately, I remember reading a story from India about Biden Niger's assassination. And they were already trying to link it to, well, this is just rivalries within Khalistanis. You know, this was retribution for what happened to Malik. And, you know, I'm reading that story thinking, well, obviously, there's no way any journalist would be able to verify this in that span of moments, minutes. You know, the narrative already now being pushed from India, like it was ready to go within minutes of this happening. And then, yes, again, Canadian media starting to pick those same narratives back up, you know, and prominent BC journalist Kim Boland, you know, demonstrating how problematic her coverage of our community has always been by simply just picking up those narratives.
And it's fascinating to me that we're so influenced and how easily Canadian media is influenced. There are overt forms of foreign interference. We see, you know, there's a Khalistani radio station here in Canada that's registered to the GOI. We see our friend AB, who's the editor of a newspaper, shown to be here as an agent of the Indian government. Like, there's obvious forms of foreign interference. And then there's these softer things where Indian media outlets just put a news story out there. And if it's close enough to Canadian journalists, it gets picked up. And I saw the same thing with the coverage of Amarpal Singh when he courted arrest, was that the language used about him surrendering or about him being a terrorist was very much first in the Indian media. And then by the time the Canadian media was telling the story, they were using the same language. There's a similar coverage of Kanda's poisoning and assassination in the UK. There's this, what in Sikh circles I have seen as an unequivocal poisoning, foreign interference, targeted murder. When we read mainstream media, it's, well, we're still deciding. There's still a postmortem being done. We still don't know. We're still looking at these resources and waiting to hear what the official story is. So there's always a hesitation to implicate the government of India in what's going on. I think this happening at the same time as Modi's visit in the States was really interesting, seeing even Obama being critical in the, and I think in a respectful, friendly way that he will be critical of Biden, but see him invite Biden to ask questions of Modi and to be critical of his human rights record. That was really interesting to see people boycott Modi's visit. That was really interesting. But we are seeing a lot of those relationships that where Modi wasn't welcome before in the States, we're seeing a lot of those being restored. And I think what I've seen from this, from Niger's assassination, Canada has held that line, has our politicians have not jeopardized the relationship they have with India to speak out openly against what's happening, or even to ask questions. So we saw Jagmeet Singh put out an open letter to Marco Mendicino and say, can you look into what happened? We saw quite a few conservative MPs come forward and ask questions and tweet. And then we saw this really interesting picture that was tweeted by the Liberal, their self-termed Sikh caucus. So there's a lot, I'd say most of, but not all of the Sikh MPs from the Liberals sitting, looking at Minister Mendicino and talking about what had happened to Niger. But again, very, very careful language, very, very intentional performance, no real action. And I don't know that an undiscerning eye would be able to, maybe I'm not giving the community enough credit, but it might feel like, oh yeah, Jagmeet said something and the Liberals said something as well. To the discerning eye, I see a huge difference between an open ask into looking into allegations of foreign interference and a performative photo op where they're looking adoringly at the minister and there's no action related to it. What do you make of the varied response between different Canadian political parties, especially at the federal level, about what happened to Niger?
Well, I think immediately within Sikh circles, there was this immediate recognition that the role of the Indian government needs to be looked into. And given that the same day, Vice of Niger had spoken about the threats to his life, had essentially said very, very straightforward that in this coming time, we will see the Indian government assassinate Sikhs who speak out. You know, he foreshadowed his own death hours before it happened. Again, I don't understand how, you know, the response doesn't address, you know, his own comments. You don't need to go beyond his own statements and understand that he was being targeted by the Indian government, you know, given the price on his head that they put out there, you know, him being warned by CSIS that he was on this list, you know, in his own comments. And I think to see Canadian politicians kind of dismiss that was extremely disappointing. I mean, unsurprising in a lot of ways that they're not there to really speak for the community. And I think I've let go of the expectations that they have that ability. You know, the Sikh caucus that we just saw the Liberals kind of create and put out there, I think this is the first time I've ever heard of the Liberals having a Sikh caucus.
That was my question too. I was like, really curious, we have a Sikh caucus. I was like, maybe I just haven't heard of it and exists. Good to know that you hadn't heard of it either.
Yeah, and I'm just kind of like, well, what do they think that their purpose is? But I think the real worry here is, you know, when it comes to our, you know, police enforcement agencies who are looking into this, unless there's that pressure from the community to really target the motive behind this, I mean, it's simple enough for them to, you know, look and find the people who actually pulled the trigger. But that's not really what the community is interested in. We're not interested in, you know, simply, you know, going after the people who pulled the trigger. We actually want to know who are the ones who ordered the hit, who are the ones and the motive and the intentionality. And you may never find that. And I think the community needs to be prepared for the fact that we'll never get a definitive answer on the role of the Indian government. But we all know that, you know, he was a target and that he warned us all that the Indian government would start to take this type of action. And without a larger push to the government to look into the role of the GOI when it comes to foreign interference, you know, I think this should have been that marquee moment where federal politicians in this country finally woke up and demanded a probe into the role of the government of India. And yet you still don't see that. And I think that's a really disappointing part, because for months, you know, when we're talking about Chinese interference, the Sikh community has been begging and demanding that we have a look at India as well. And we're, even where, like, you know, intelligence, Trudeau's intelligence chief talks about this, it's still not being discussed at a mainstream level. It's still not being prioritized. And our Sikh representatives are still not making it a priority.
And we see, so that, I think, right? That's we the see part him that's say really that India's foreign interference is one of the biggest threats. We still don't see a probe into it. And asking the question, is India involved at a level they shouldn't be, is not the same as hurling an accusation that they are. And I think from a community perspective, I am way more ready to say that this was GOI. I don't have the same burden of a federal individual saying that, like, I have to have 100% proof lined up. I understand the dynamics of my community. This feels like deja vu. This feels like late 90s. This feels like everything we knew that was going on. It feels very, very much like we've seen it before. But at the federal level, it's okay to at least ask the question, is this happening? And we can look into it. And that hesitation to not even have a foreign interference probe, to have so many challenging dynamics as who's appointed to look into foreign interference, and to have that be a roadblock. Like, there's so much going on there that's so unnecessary, and we're not actually getting to what we need to get to. And so I think that was really, really importantly, that was one of World Circle Organization's asks, was that we look into what's happening. And I think the other thing that was really important from the WSO statement that I picked up were the words of our president, who said, while this killing may have the intention of striking fear into the hearts of Sikhs, it will have the opposite effect. Sikhs will continue to fearlessly advocate for Khalistan and against Indian human rights abuses, as they have the right to do. This is the other thing, is talking about Khalistan not illegal? Advocating for Khalistan well within what we are allowed to do as Canadians. This is not something that you should be shot for. This is not something that you should hesitate to talk about. And while WSO is saying that Sikhs have the right to do this, I think this is something that every Canadian needs to stand by, is that we have the freedom of expression. And I've actually seen some really interesting folks come out and say the same thing, including Ojil Dasanjh and Terry Malowski. At different points, they've both said, like, yeah, we actually do have freedom of expression and you're allowed to talk about these things. I'm paraphrasing. You can look up their actual quotes, but they have not turned on essential Canadian values. And I think that's really important. My personal ask is for the community is to be able to keep a clear head in the chaos, because the chaos is where people are getting hurt, and the seeds of all of this have been sown. And I see foreign interference in so many different ways. We see signs going up around Mississauga, Moulton, Brampton about Sikhs as terrorists, Khalistanis as terrorists. We see a Khalistan rally going to an Air India victims memorial, and it's going to end there. It's starting in Moulton and it's ending there. It's unclear who is starting the chaos, and we don't have answers for that. But I see people from the community genuinely rise up because of the feelings in their heart. And those are not foreign actors. Those are members of the community who show up, who see themselves in the chaos, who feel angry about the Khalistanis as terrorist signs, who take the bait, and who further contribute to the chaos. So there's this fascinating mix of foreign interference and genuine sentiment from the community, where people are seeing themselves in the chaos and rising to the occasion. The more chaos there is, the easier it is for someone to get hurt and for us to, like, literally not know who pulled the trigger. That's kind of where we're sitting right now. So if anything, feelings are valid. Conversations on Khalistan are valid. Stay above the chaos. Keep your head above it. That's the only thing I can ask of people, because when we're at the point where we're asking who pulled the trigger, we've gotten a little bit lost. We are falling victim to the foreign interference and all the chaos that's being strewn around us. So on that note, let's take a little bit of a jump into something a little bit more heartening, something that started out extremely disheartening and I think is still not resolved, but heartening because a huge shawashe to the international students who these folks originally came here and were issued fraudulent acceptance letters to universities and colleges, sorry, mostly colleges. And then they were starting to deport the students. And if you know, if you've been following, WSO does a lot of advocacy for international students, but generally, if you know what's going on, these folks are coming here and paying 3 to 4 times the tuition that a domestic student is paying. They're doing their community college diplomas, hoping to get a postgraduate work permit and eventually immigrate here. It is a hard life. It is an expensive life. It is not a life where all of the services that you need are here for you. So you show up and you might be in crowded housing. You might be working cash, a job at cash where you're paid under the table. Health insurance might not cover all procedures. It's not the same as the provincial health insurance that domestic folks have. It's just completely putting extremely young folks in a vulnerable position at the best of times. So if you actually have a real seat in a college and you have a pathway to immigration and a skilled job and everything that you need. For these folks, they came here with the same hopes and dreams, only to be told that the letters they were issued were fraudulent and that as the victims of fraud, they were then going to be deported. We saw huge shout outs to WSO Ontario board member Jaspreet Singh, who has a lived experience as an international student. So that's originally the route that he took to becoming Canadian, and he is a tireless, I don't know where he finds the energy, tireless advocate. We saw a physical protest happening. He was on the front lines. Folks were camping out there, sleeping there for days. We saw a lot of politicians show up from across the political spectrum to the front lines of the protest. And right now, not only have the deportations been stopped, but there's actually an immigration agent who's been charged with issuing the fraudulent letters. And we've seen some steps in the right direction. But Harmon, as you were watching all of this unfold, were you hopeful? Did you think these folks were going to have their voices heard, that it was going to become such a big issue? Again, it hit the mainstream news as well. Or were you a little bit cynical given how much advocacy we've done unsuccessfully?
You know, I think when you look at that immigration process, and especially for, you know, what in the modern iteration of what's happening with students, there's so many bad faith actors along the whole chain, right? And it's so, I have a lot of, time for these vulnerable students who are being exploited all the way through. You know, whether it's by the agent in India, the eyelid center there, the colleges here, the paper mills, their employers, their landlords. I've seen it day to day in every part of this country. You know, newcomers here are being exploited, and it's very, very discouraging. So, you know, to see the students themselves kind of go out and really bring attention to this issue and show solidarity with one another was very, very encouraging. And I think, you know, we have to really recognize the role they took in being their advocates for themselves and really kind of putting pressure on the government to have to do something. I think it's a great moment for us to be able to ally with them. But, you know, for them to take that lead and bring attention to this. And over the past several years, we've seen students really come to the forefront in bringing up certain issues. And this is one of those outcomes of what we saw during the Kisan Morcha and the protests. So much of what was organized in Canada in support of the Morcha was organized by students. I know in Edmonton that it was international students who really took the lead in organizing here. And I think, you know, they've really understood what it means to demand action and to advocate for their rights. So Yeah, I have a lot of faith in that generation of activists that, you know, they're going to be relentless and they're gonna show solidarity. So not surprised that eventually this issue had to be addressed because the temperature was just increasing so much. And it's not, and we're not talking about, you know, tens of thousands. There was, you know, it's still several hundreds of students who were impacted by this. So let's see what comes out of the probe itself. But yeah, unsurprising, given, you know, the role that students have started to play in our community, especially in the diaspora, you know, and starting to understand what it means to protest. I mean, frankly, you know, even with what's happened with Bhai Hardeep Singh, you know, I think what a lot of the community is thinking about is what does next steps look like? What will it take for us to get the attention of the federal government? You know, does it take sit-ins? Does it take blockades? Does it take, you know, and you saw the Sangat in the media aftermath kind of shut down the road in front of the Gurukha for hours, you know, and basically into the next day. And that was, you know, you saw the community come together. But does this mean that we need to start protesting across this country to actually get the attention of the federal government? Maybe that's what it takes. Maybe it takes blockades, rolling blockades.
And I think you hit the nail on the head with the advocacy of these folks. Whenever I talk about international students to someone who's asking for a consult or asking for what can we do, I always start with the fact that they are the biggest strength our community has right now. These folks are young. They are political by necessity. They need to be political to survive their very existence here. This creation of second-class citizens through brain drain and neocolonization of Punjab has created this nightmare living situation where they are necessarily political because they need to survive. And so we have these folks who have brought life into our communities, into our advocacy, and not just into the advocacy. They don't just advocate for themselves and for their own survival. But yeah, we saw it in the farmers' protest. We see it now with GOI foreign interference. They will continue to raise their voices. And it's always very humbling when we go in an ally capacity to support as WSO, because there's actually very little that we can do. They know how to go to the media, how to do interviews. If you follow Jaspreet Singh's organization, International Sikh Student Association, you can find them on Instagram, international_students_Canada. You'll see some of the video of the young men who testified to the Immigration Standing Committee meeting. Like, these folks are making it to the highest levels of government. There's a picture on their Instagram where they met Minister Sean Fraser, the Minister of Immigration. That's all self-advocacy. That's not, they didn't come to us and say, hey, WSO has been doing this for decades. How do you guys get the ear of politicians and how do you do this? It's absolutely us showing up and saying, what can we do to help? Because y'all have figured out the protest. You figured out the media. You figured out how to talk to the ministers at the highest level. You are figuring out how to survive. So humbling. And we have so much we can learn from them. And they're absolutely infusing life into our community. So the conditions with which they've been brought here require a lot of work, but these folks are bringing so much life into our communities and are such a huge asset. And it's truly humbling to watch them do the work that they do. So please continue to follow that story. Please continue to uplift their voices. It's by no means is it over. The fact that the deportations didn't happen and there's investigations going on and arrests being made doesn't mean that it's over. These folks are still vulnerable and we still don't know what's going to happen to them. If you follow us on all of our WSO channels, we will continue to amplify their voices as well, or you can follow them directly. As I mentioned, the International Sikh Students Association will put a lot of content up and you can always see what's happening there. So I think that's it for this month. Stay tuned for an interview. Follow us as always. We're all over social media. We're always at worldsikh.org. And if any of the work that we're doing is something that you would like to support, you can check out how to donate on our WorldSikh organization page. Hopefully we'll come back next month, continue to talk about all the ways the panth remains in Jardikala. And even though all of these things are happening, that is unequivocal that everyone is in high spirits and everyone is continuing to do the work that needs to be done. So until we meet again,
Vaheguru Ji Ka Khalsa, Vaheguru Ji Ki Fateh. My name is Magdalene Kaur, and today I am joined by a member of World Sikh Organization. We have the legal counsel and spokesperson for the World Sikh Organization of Canada, Balpreet Singh, here with us today. Thank you so much, Balpreet, for joining me on the podcast and for taking some time to be here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So let's just jump right into it. So, Balpreet, could you tell us a bit on what your role is as the legal counsel and spokesperson for WSO?
Yeah, so I've been at this position since 2009. So a lot of it's helping people with accommodation issues, but it's also about advocating on behalf of the Sikh community, identifying issues that are important to the Sikh community, and making sure that any issues that are arising, any problems that are arising, are addressed. And part of that also means scanning the news, looking for narratives, and just making sure I'm on top of everything that's happening in the Sikh community in Canada.
Oh yeah, that's fantastic. So I've only been part of the team for so much time, but in the time that I have been, it's been really cool to see the work that you, well, WSO does, but also that you contribute to it. So that's amazing. And I thought today we could touch specifically on foreign interference, because I know this has been pretty relevant for some time now, but especially now. So yeah, so for today's episode, we're going to focus on the topic of foreign interference. So for those who don't know too much about exactly what foreign interference is, or why we find it to be concerning, or why it's relevant, could you tell us what foreign interference is? And why we should be talking about it, and why it is a concern.
Foreign interference is a very broad spectrum of basically outside powers, outside countries trying to manipulate or create issues here in Canada. So we're mainly talking about malign foreign interference. So we're not talking about positive foreign interference, which could be, you know, like festivals or something like this. We're talking about trying to create a situation where Canadians are at a loss, or there's a negative impact on Canadians, and inversely a positive effect for outside countries.
Okay, so could you give an example of what would be like a negative foreign interference versus something that could be, because in my eyes, I've often heard of it in a very negative term. We don't see foreign interference in a good way. But could you provide an example of what would be both spectrums of it?
So foreign interference, like I said, it's such a broad spectrum of things that could be happening. For example, vote manipulation. For example, intimidation of activists here in Canada, or trying to control what's taught in schools. So this is all examples of foreign interference. Like foreign, outside countries always are exerting influence in other countries. Like that's just the way diplomacy works. So trying to create economic ties, trying to create cultural ties. This is all, I wouldn't call it necessarily interference, but like foreign countries at work. So there's that, but then there's stuff that shouldn't be happening. So the malign foreign interference is stuff that should not be happening, but it's happening at the behest of foreign countries or powers.
Okay, I understand now. Yes. So, and often, from my understanding, the what has been happening in against activists, I will say just particularly Sikh activists, is there has been, WSO has touched on how Sikh activists are being targeted could be foreign interference. Could you elaborate on that and why this is a concern that WSO does touch on?
So Indian interference in Canada is a very long-standing concern of the Sikh community. Recently, the National Security Advisor recognized that India is one of the biggest sources of foreign interference in Canada. But from a Sikh perspective, we've seen this happening for decades. For example, in the 80s, we knew that the Indian consulates here were active in manipulating media, were trying to create anti-Sikh narratives. In the spring of 1987, for example, a number of Indian diplomats were identified by CSIS for having been engaging in foreign interference and intelligence activities against the Sikh community, and were actually asked to leave. But there's a long history of it. Even most recently, in April 2020, for example, Global News found that there was an Indian editor based out of Canada who had been meeting with RAW, which is the Research and Analysis Wing, which is India's intelligence agency, which is active outside of India, that this editor by the name of AB, that's the acronym they use, had been meeting with intelligence for over 25 times over 5 years. And he was denied immigration as a result. But this was a court case that happened, and it was revealed that he was missioned with having to influence politicians here and to create a narrative about Canada, individuals in Canada supporting extremist activities and sending money to Pakistan. So it's clear that it was happening and it continues to happen.
Okay. Wow, that's unfortunate. And so I guess my follow-up question would be, and I'm not sure if there is a solid answer on this, but what kind of action, I guess, can be taken by the government of Canada or by people who are active in the community to prevent or to take actions against foreign interference so that it's not, even if it is there and it's not as obvious, it can be, there can be action taken against it when it is the malign one?
So the problem here really is that our system isn't very efficient at being able to counter foreign interference. So CSIS is our intelligence agency that's supposed to monitor and gather intelligence about foreign interference here in Canada. But the fact of the matter is that CSIS doesn't have any prosecutorial powers. So they can't take someone to court. They can't press charges. All they can do is collect information and pass it on. And that's really not good enough. So during Hardeep Singh Nijjar's funeral that happened last week, there was an individual who was caught transmitting pictures and video to members of the Indian intelligence and security services through WhatsApp. So he's caught red-handed. He's transmitting these images. But what are you going to charge him with? So the RCMP were called. They detained him. I understand that they were involved, but I also understand that he wasn't charged with anything, because the question is, what are they going to charge him with? Our system's not created to be able to do anything about foreign interference. And on top of that, we've got a sad situation where politics is playing a big role in the way we deal with foreign interference. So if it's Russian foreign interference, if it's Chinese foreign interference or Iranian, those are all names that we're familiar with, and Canada has taken a very strong stand, very openly called it out. But we know that Canada wants to build stronger relations with India for economic reasons. And because China is really not an option anymore, India is the only alternative that Canada sees. So even though India is one of the biggest sources of foreign interference, Canada is very scared to do anything. So this is a problem, and it's at the detriment of the Sikh community.
That is most definitely a problem. And that's, it is like very unfortunate to note that they can't, there is no thing that they can be charged with, although there is that pain from the individuals who are being affected or the community who is feeling like they're being targeted against. And is there anything, any action that you would say the community can take in terms of lobbying or just speaking to government of, or is this just such a big issue that it's kind of, it needs to be worked more within the government, more internally?
What needs to happen is that the Canadian government really needs to take a stand. So India bullies the government of Canada all the time. This isn't new, actually. Even in the 80s, the narrative was the same, which was that we want to build closer relations with Canada, but it's these Khalistanis that are creating a problem. And if you don't do something about Sikh extremism in Khalistan, we will not increase our relations with you. Same story from the 80s, and it's the same thing that we're hearing from the Indian foreign minister even today, Jaishankar. He's saying the same stuff. So it's basically Canada having to take a stand and say, our community here has certain rights, and they will be allowed to continue to do whatever they do as long as it's peaceful advocacy. In terms of actual foreign interference here in Canada, I think Canada knows more than what it lets on. So in the 80s, like I said, a number of Indian diplomats were expelled from Canada. And I think that based on recent events in which it seems as though foreign interference was responsible, Indian foreign interference was responsible for the assassination of Hardeep Singh Nijjar, I think a strong statement needs to come from Canada in saying that we won't tolerate this. So what I'm most concerned about is that Canada or law enforcement will find the individuals who pulled the trigger, but who the people or the powers that ordered the hit will never ever be revealed, even though Canada may know who did it. So I just think Canada needs to take a stronger stand. Otherwise, it's going to be at the expense of the Sikh community.
That makes a lot of sense. This conversation has definitely helped me understand a lot more about, because I'd often heard for a long time about foreign interference, these words that are, you know, Sikh activists being targeted. And it's a little, when you don't know too much about it or you're hearing a lot, it's a little overwhelming when you are trying to tie things together. So that was definitely the case for me prior to this conversation. And it's making some more sense now at the least. So thank you so much for this conversation, for joining me here today, for at least scratching the surface on what is a very broad, as you were saying, topic. So thank you so much, Balpreet Singh, for joining me today, for being on the podcast, and for speaking about foreign interference and enlightening us on this. And thank you so much, Vahegut Jugal Khalsa, Vahegut Jugal.